the jungle whispered that the drowned earth was not always as it is now. Eulaia, a continent regrowing, recovering, in renaissance. To the population of this great continent, there can be no doubt. The world was once very different from the one we see today. Everywhere in Eulaia, the evidence of a once majestic civilization rises out of the jungle like questioning fingers reaching mournfully for the sky. Yet the mystery of the builders and how they came to fall is just one of Eulaia's many secrets. For it is not just a land of enigmatic ruins. The preceding centuries have given birth to a carpet of verdant and tenacious life which has striven, conquered, and spread. Wondrous creatures, mysterious cultures, and diverse tropical biotopes adorn Eulaia like jewels, a magnificent tribute to the enduring power of nature. How did the world come to be this way? Folk memory of the event which saw the fall of civilization tells of blackened skies, raging floods, extreme cold and heat, and times of unspeakable hardship and horror. Yet no one can agree on precisely what caused this dire cataclysm, or indeed, how many years have passed since. Another great mystery of Eulaia is the makeup of animal life, both intelligent and otherwise. The clues left by the builders show a very different world to the one we find ourselves in now. What changed? Where were the other races of Eulaia before the event? Did they even exist? The land itself has fully recovered. Nature is, without a doubt, in full control. The road to recovery for intelligent life on Eulaia, however, has only just begun. After an unknown span of time, struggling for survival in nomadic groups, people began to settle down several hundred years ago, organizing themselves first into villages, then towns, and eventually, cities. Nations have been born, alliances have been made, and efforts have begun, not just to protect against the often hostile land of Eulaia, but to unlock its secrets, and in some small measure, to reclaim what has been lost. Who were the builders? It is a mystery which lives with most of the population of Eulaia, and much superstition surrounds the memory of these people and their crumbling legacy. However, as people settled down and began to grow and organize, separation of labor extended to being able to support a class of scientists and scholars, most of whom are engaged in the sorts of study which help their societies progress. What we would call a university is, in most parts of Eulaia, known as an esoterica, a place to study things more esoteric than the directly practical application of pulley, cog, gasket, and lever. To those scholars, the question of who the builders were is far less mysterious. While on the one hand, material reminders of the builders are common, access to their records and information is extremely difficult. In an environment as wet and humid as Eulaia, paper rots away all too easily. Unless stored in airtight and oxygenless containers, information printed on plash sheet has fared much better, but it seems as though this sort of physical media was only in use for the last few centuries prior to the event. The The majority of information was stored on great thinking engines and optical brains. This sort of technology presents an almost insurmountable challenge to modern scientists. Occasionally, a working thinking engine is discovered, but they are extremely rare, and almost as rare are the few engineers, such as the famed Elephangus Plage of the Obelisk Research Facility, who attempt to build their own thinking engines from found parts. Tantalizing glimpses of the Builder's Society can be constructed from the fragmentary data such devices contain. However, this knowledge is not common. For example, it is clear to those studying the Builders that non-human races are conspicuously absent. It seems, therefore, that the Builders were an exclusively human society. This, however, is not a popular idea outside the Esotericus. Speculation as to why this might be, whether non-human races were responsible for the event, or that they might have been created by humans, are divisive topics. The ruins. So much information about the Builders is known, but not commonplace amongst the wider population. Even ideas which are commonly known are disputed, and in a world with no common means of disseminating information, ignorance, conjecture, and superstition are rife. However, no one can deny that the Builders dominated the landscape of their time. The fact that their monuments still linger is an undeniable reminder of their former power. Until you reach the highland interior of the east of Yelaya, it is extremely common to find ruins. In many places, these are sporadic, the occasional tower piercing the canopy, or a half-submerged dome forming an island lake. In many parts of Yelaya, the ruins are very dense, forming a truly three-dimensional jungle, as vines hang between entropic skyscrapers and palms sprout from windows like so much oversized fungus. Time, though, has taken its toll. How much time is a matter of great debate. With around 300 years of recorded history, we can be confident that the event happened at least 400 years in the past. But beyond that, little is known. Some scholars have attempted to measure the span of time since the event by studying the decay and degradation of the ruins and artifacts. But these efforts have resulted in different scholars coming to extremely different conclusions. In many parts of Yelaya, the ruins are highly dangerous places. Toppling buildings are not uncommon, which makes research, or indeed the treasure hunting activity referred to as artifacting, extremely hazardous. In certain places, such as the Kolriks, people have made efforts to repurpose the ruins, enforcing them with modern materials and shoring up weaknesses. In most places, though, the ruins have been left to decay. Not all ruins can be found above ground. Rising sea levels in the years since the event have seen much change to the landscape. Silt carried by flood water or the meandering courses of rivers have created islands out of some ruins and entirely buried others. In higher areas, these mounds are honeycombed with passages where silt never penetrated, or where further water erosion has washed it away. Somewhat akin to cave systems, these dank networks can be amazing sources of preserved artifacts, where a lack of oxygen has sometimes meant much slower than average decay. One might think that after 200 years of intense exploration, sites above ground would have been picked clean. However, the population of Yelaya is still relatively small, and habitation is usually concentrated into widely spaced pockets of reasonably high density. Furthermore, the wilds of Yelaya are incredibly dangerous. Any expedition into the wilds has to be taken very seriously indeed, and many experienced explorers, scavengers, and artifactors lose their lives each year to predatory sores, poisonous insects, or are simply swallowed up by the emerald inferno of Ulaya's jungles. In more populated or accessible areas, the surface ruins have indeed been picked clean. In those areas, one has to look below ground, in tunnel networks, or simply to dig. Occasionally, a typhoon, monsoon rains, or landslide opens up a new site, and people flock to it in an event known as a tech rush. Thanks for joining us for another tale from the drowned earth. As always, you can check out the Indie Invasion podcast on Podbean and all of your other podcast services. You can also check us out on Patreon and our Facebook page. And remember to prepare yourself for the invasion.